So do you think if they did not announce spring break, you would be this drained? It seems like everyone is looking ahead to spring break. Well, since you're playing with fire today, as soon as I shut up and let you at it, you need to, very first thing, put on goggles. And the full goggles, not just the glasses. And keep them on till you're done today. But we are doing a process today called calorimetry. Now, the metry part of that word means it's a measurement technique. Calor means heat, but more generally, it refers to energy. And calorimetry is the measurement of the energy content of whatever sample you're measuring. That calor root is the same thing that's in the word calorie, and somewhere along the line, calories got associated with only food in a lot of people's mind. It's just a unit of, a calorie is just a unit of energy, whether you're measuring that in food or not. So, that's one thing I'll say about calories. I have another thing to say in a minute. But calorie and calorimetry are not the same thing. A calorie is a unit of energy that you can express energy content in. There's other units of energy you could use as well, like joules, for instance. But calorimetry is the technique of determining the energy content of the sample. A sample can be anything you want. Now, in most of the cases of your samples today, they happen to be food items. One of them is not. The stick, you could eat the stick, but you're not going to get any nutrition out of it, right? Because of what I described upstairs. We don't have the enzymes that can break the glycosidic linkages between the glucoses that make up cellulose, which is what wood is made out of mostly. So, it doesn't have any food calories, because you're not going to get any nutrition from it, but it's still chock full of energy, which is why it will burn easily. Alright? So, calories don't necessarily have anything to do with food. They're just units of energy. Now, I need to define calorie, which is the unit. And even if you do calorimetry, you can express it in other units, but we're gonna use calories as units today. And a calorie is nice to work with because it is based on water, and specifically it's based on the specific heat capacity of water. The definition of a calorie is that it's the amount of energy required to raise the temperature of exactly 1 gram of pure water by exactly 1 degree centigrade, or 1 Kelvin, which is the same size. You could say it either way. Okay, so notice that that is really based on the specific heat capacity of water. Remember that in general, the specific heat capacity of something is the amount of energy required to raise the temperature of that stuff, whatever it is, by 1 Kelvin or 1 centigrade degree. Well, a calorie was defined as a unit based on the specific heat capacity of water specifically. If you have exactly 1 gram and it's pure water, it will take 1 calorie to raise the temperature of that much water by 1 degree exactly. Well, how much, you know, grams are mass, of course, right? If you have 1 gram of water, how much volume does that occupy? This is another nice thing of basing things on water. 1 gram of water, if you put that into a perfect cube, would be exactly 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter. So you could call it a cubic centimeter. But what's another name for a cubic centimeter in the metric system? One cubic centimeter is the same as 1 milliliter. It's 1/1000th of a liter. If you have a 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter cube, there's 1,000 of those in a liter bottle, for instance. All right? So that's what a calorie is. But I need to tell you an embarrassing episode from science. This is just ridiculously stupid. And therefore, it pisses me off. But we're getting over it, this one at least. And that is that there are two units different from each other, one of which is called the calorie, and the other one is called the calorie. And you can't tell at all the difference if you're listening to the recording, because they are homophonous. They are pronounced exactly the same. They're spelled the same, except that one has an uppercase C and the other one has a lowercase C. This is the stupidest part of this. Despite that being the only difference, and therefore easily confusable, these are different units with different sizes. So calorie with a lowercase c, which I'll call a scientific calorie, is not equal to calorie with an uppercase C. An uppercase C is sometimes called a food calorie. But uppercase C calorie is actually equal to 1,000 lowercase calories, which means that one uppercase C calorie is equal to 1 kilocalorie. An uppercase calorie is 1,000 times as big as a lowercase calorie. Now, the reason these are called food calories is because this uppercase C version is what used to appear on food labels and still does on certain labels. What I meant earlier when I said that we're getting over this stupidity is that they realized this was a terrible idea to do this. And so modern food labels now tend not to have the word calorie in them with an uppercase C. Instead, they use kilocalories on the label, if you've noticed. But what I gave you as a definition of calorie, that was lowercase. So when we say that an average human adult male has a normal intake of about 2,000 calories, that's 2,000 food calories, which means 2,000 kilocalories, which is actually 2 million calories, 2 million lowercase calories per day, which is a lot of energy you're taking in as food. Based on the definition I gave you, that means one day's amount of food is enough, has enough energy. You can think about it two ways. That's enough energy to raise the temperature of 2 million milliliters of water, which is 2,000 liters, 2,000 one-liter bottles of water, which is a big amount of water that's hard to heat up. You can heat that up by a degree with the energy you take in one day. Or you can think about it as enough energy to heat up 1 milliliter of water, 1 gram, by 2 million degrees, which, of course, it wouldn't stay liquid, but that's the amount of energy that a human takes in each day, his food. Okay, so realize that these are two different units, and when we say calorie in science, we're usually meaning scientific calorie, lowercase. That's the basis for what you're doing today. That's why the definition isn't so important. It is why you're able to do the technique of calorimetry that we're using today. Now, there are multiple ways that you can conduct calorimetry. And the way we're doing it today is a very crude method, which means although you do calculate values for calories per gram of your food items, because of the crudeness of the technique, you should expect your values that you compute for those foods to be much lower than they actually are. If you look these up on food labels for the various things you're doing, the food label values you should expect to be much higher. And that's because what we're doing to measure the energy content of these samples is to burn them. We put them, to flame. We're combusting them, in other words, reacting them with oxygen. And these are organic fuels that we're burning. Our samples are all organic fuels, right? What is produced when we combust them? Water and what else? Carbon dioxide. Those both go into the air, right? But heat, a lot of heat is also produced. And that heat, in the form of the flame of the burning sample, is what you hold under the test tube full of a known amount of water. So you carefully measure a volume and therefore a mass of water. It's pure water. Since you know how much it is, if you take a careful measurement of its temperature before and then after heating it up, then you know by the definition of the calorie how many calories it took to heat the water up by that much. Well, the calories are the energy released by burning the sample. So to get your ultimate goal, calculation-wise, which is a value of calories per gram, you not only have to keep track of before and after measurement and the volume of the water, but you also have to keep track of how much of the food burned. Not the entire sample will burn. So you need to get a careful initial mass and final mass, which I'll have more to say about in a minute. But anyway, when you do that, you know, you're putting your sample over your flame of your burner to get it lit. And how do you know it's lit? By looking at it, right? Well, seeing that flame, that's some of the energy. That's not going to go into the water, so that's wasted. Plus, it takes some time while it's still burning to get it under the test tube. All of that gets wasted. And even when you do have the thing aflame under the test tube, not even close to 100% of that energy is going into the water, right? A lot of it is just heating up the air. And you might hear it. If you hear it, that's other energy that's wasted. That's what I meant by saying it's a really crude technique. Only a little bit of the energy actually gets put into the water. But the samples that have the highest calorie content will heat the water up the most. And that's the idea. If you compare that to a food label, the food label will be much higher because they use a much more refined calorimetry technique. They use what's called bomb calorimetry. And for bomb calorimetry, you use what's called the bomb. It is a very thick-walled stainless steel chamber that you can unscrew the lid on and put your sample in. The sample can be whatever, like a dead rat, whatever. If you want to measure the whole calorie content of a energy content of an organism, you can put the whole organism in there. Anything that'll burn, basically. Put your sample in the bomb, you screw the lid on tightly, and it's very thick-walled, so it's not going to explode, even though it's called a bomb. And it has ports in it so that once it's sealed up, your sample's in there, you pump it full of pure oxygen. Many atmospheres of pressure of pure oxygen. So there's way more oxygen available for combustion than there is just in the air. Which is why, and it also has electrodes in it that you can spark once you have it all pumped up and sample filled. That one spark with all that oxygen is going to burn the fuel all at once and completely burn it. The only thing that's going to be left in there is just ash. All right? Well, you don't do this out in the open. This whole thing, once you prepare it, this bomb is put in a tank which is filled with a very accurately measured volume of water, pure water, and you completely submerge the bomb. So when it does get burned, there is nowhere that heat can go except into the water. None of it gets wasted. And therefore, if you make a very careful measurement before of the water, of temperature, and then after, you can tell by that change in water temperature along with how much water there is, how many grams of water there is, based on the definition of calorie, how many calories it must have took. And therefore, that was the energy content of the sample. That's how you do it if you really care. But what we're doing is really just quick and dirty. Okay? Even though it's not really a very accurate method, I want you to do it correctly. So let me say a couple things about how to not make mistakes. Your samples are up here labeled. By the way, this is your dirty test tube bin, as the sign indicates. These are going to get sooty. Don't try to clean your test tubes. Don't throw them in here so they break, but just place them in here. Don't try to clean them up when you're done. The fresh ones, if you need more, are here in this box, but you have some already. Anyway, to do this, you need, first of all, to make careful temperature measurements. So you have this set up. The ring stand already has a thermometer hooked on it. And notice that each of these clamps, this bottom one is for the tube, test tube, this top one's for the thermometer, they both can swivel if you play around with them. And the reason that's important is because you want to have this set up once you have your carefully measured amount of water in the tube. You have to know the volume, because a greater amount of water is going to take more calories to heat it up, right? That's why you need to know the volume. But anyway, once you have your tube with water in it, you put it in this bottom clamp in such a way that you have to make sure that the bulb of the thermometer is completely under the water surface, but also that it's not touching any glass. And you might need to play with it, because you need to change these angles so that the thermometer is not touching glass on the bottom or the sides of the tube. Otherwise, your temperature will be wrong. Okay? That's one thing you need to be careful about. And by the way, when you set these up, it's very easy to not realize it's not clamped and let go of the tube, and it will fall right onto this metal ring stand and it'll break. So probably at least one of you will do that. Try not to, though. Hang on to it until you know that it's clamped. The other, even more important part of setup, though, is getting your masses. You have to get an initial mass and a final mass. Well, actually, before I leave temperature, you have to get an initial temperature and a final temperature for each sample. So don't assume that water is going to be the same temperature each time you start from, you know, getting water from the same jug. Make a measurement of each water initially. Get an initial measurement. And realize that temperatures aren't immediately indicated. It takes a while for a thermometer to come to equilibrium. So keep an eye on it until it stops. That's your initial temperature. Also, you need to keep an eye on the temperature, because even if the flame goes out or you blow it out intentionally and it's no longer burning, that does not mean at that moment the temperature is correct on the thermometer, right? If it's still rising, that still counts. Look at it until it's no longer rising and then write down that peak temperature. Okay. The other thing, though, is about mass. Like I said earlier, not all of your sample is going to burn. And that's okay, because what we're computing eventually is calories per gram, meaning that as long as you know how many grams burned, you're okay. Doesn't have to be all of your sample. But the only way you can know how many grams burned is to compare the mass before with after. When you burn these things, especially the sugary ones, they're going to drip. Things are going to fall off of the burning sample that you're holding in the tongs. And so, not just for cleanliness, but also, more importantly, for the sake of the computations, you want to make sure that before you start any burning, you have a piece of foil down here so that those things that do drip can be weighed. It's going to stick to this stuff. You're not going to get all of it off and be able to weigh it. So you need to have the foil be a place where the drips can occur, and also whatever's left in your tongs after it's done burning, you put that on the foil for the final mass as well. Well, it's going to stick to the foil, so you're not going to be able to take it off the foil, which means you're going to have a combined mass of the what's left over of the food, the sample, plus the foil. That means you need to do the same thing at the beginning. So, zero the scale with nothing on it, and this is for each sample, you have to do the same thing. Zero the scale first, then take a new piece of foil plus your sample, put them both on there and get a combined mass. That's your initial mass. Put that piece of foil, not another piece of foil, because they all weigh differently, on your base so that it can collect all the drips. When you're done with that, take that same, zero it again, take that same piece of foil to the same scale, ideally, and get a combined mass. And that way, when you subtract, you're subtracting out that same piece of foil, and the only difference in mass will be the amount of sample that went into the form of CO2 and water in the air. That's the amount that burned. That's why it doesn't matter that you have some left over. And so that amount that burned is the per gram part. That all make sense? Now, the only other thing I want to say about temperature is that you need to start with fresh water each time you change samples. Theoretically, you could just keep the water in there and do a new sample, right? You don't want to do that because you don't want to start with water that's already hot. Not because there's anything wrong with hot water. It's just that if you heat water, I'm just going to make a quick graph of temperature versus time. If you keep heating water, it's going to get a higher and higher temp, of course, but only until it hits boiling point. And then the temperature is going to stay the same while you're putting more heat into it. It's just going to turn more liquid into more gas while it stays the same temperature. And if you get temperatures here and here, that says, oh, there was no change in temperature, and therefore no heat. Well, that's wrong, right? You have to get your temperatures while it's actually increasing, before and after. And that's why the manual tells you not to let the temperature get above 80. Because it'll start boiling at 100 and your data will be wrong. That's another reason you need to keep an eye on the temperature. While it's burning, you need to keep an eye on the temperature. And if it's some things will burn better than others. If it's still burning when you hit 80, blow it out. So that you have that safety range, you can get a good final temperature, then a final mass, and everything will be okay. That's why you start with cold water each time. Just don't assume it's the same temperature as the other cold water. Measure it each time. The sample calculations are shown in there, but let me know if you have any trouble with that. You do the same math on all the samples, but that's really all there is to it, and it doesn't take all that long, which is kind of nice.